Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Wednesday, July 24th, 2019. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Arcane Semantics. Would like to break down for people and also to share perhaps this archive with people you know some of the primary talking points, if you will, regarding Western civilization and the concerns regarding its maintenance. Generally, I'd like to discuss the nature of free societies. Western society, we hear this phrase tossed around quite a lot. How many people are confident they could define Western society? To some extent, it would partially depend on how politically correct the climate around you requires of you. I understand that. But let's say that's not a concern. You know, let's say you're able to speak frankly with your folk, with your friends and family, and they wanted to hear some of your insights on these matters that they know you are aware of. You know, I mean, how can we break things down to more people? Because what I see as a major roadblock is this stigma, this Pavlovian reaction a lot of people tend to have regarding a lot of topics surrounding race and any European homeland, any nation seen as European in nature, that's taboo these days, you know. That's something that our enemies want to stamp out of existence for the security of their way. So what would you say to some of the people you know? What is Western society? I would suggest that a precedent for the perpetuation of a free society, even just the potential to have a free society at all, requires a certain inherent genetic basis. And that lends toward what we refer to as culture. A lot of this does have to do with IQ, average IQ, you know, of a given people. And there are a lot of qualities which can be in stronger or lesser amounts, tendencies, as well as physical attributes, which could lend to certain cultural and survival-based lifestyle requirements specific to where a given people may have continued their evolution. Some people don't even want to hear that word evolution. I'd like to keep this relatively neutral. Even those who prefer to think of most of this in terms of creator rather than in terms of collection of scientific data, there can still be, to a lot of these people, an indisputable reality that races differ quite a bit from one another, and they require and can withstand varying degrees of conditions. And some of that can include potential benefits towards something such as a free society, What we're seeing today is a combination of influences, but we have this overall parasitic quality that is not just being used by our primary parasitic enemy, but many, many others who are benefiting off a welfare state, which is gradually cannibalizing much of the wealth of many of our nations, both in the U.S. communities as well as in Europe. I would say that this is something a lot of people don't want to talk about. They don't want to touch it, you know. They don't want to think about differences in IQ related to race because it's thought of as evil. You know, everything related to eugenics is to be seen as evil, much like the Allied powers' official narrative of Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich. Their delve into eugenics research. And, of course, the lie of the Holocaust narrative, which did not actually happen, which, of course, reinforces that, you know, looking into things along a racial line is systemically evil and all-encompassing. But many of us have looked past that, but still are not willing to discuss this with people. I think a lot of information has been suppressed, or a lot of research isn't even facilitated or funded. When you look at archaeology, for example, and this out of Africa theory, we've had a lot of advances in the last few years alone, which is actually giving much more credibility to an alternative, which is highly likely the case. You know, far more likely than the out of Africa theory, which suggests that for a substantial amount of time, all races came from a single point out of Africa, and only very recently had changed due to regional conditions into the different races we know today, but that there have been no long separate distinct strains, if you will, lineages from one another throughout evolution. And this, of course, helps a lot of the black history advocates, the crowd that want to take all credit from whites for everything and say, you know, it was really blacks first, and look at ancient Egypt. Of course, that has been now confirmed more and more to be people, as far as the nobility of ancient Egypt, a people of Aryan stock. But as far as the multi-regional origins, this is the correct term, as opposed to the out of Africa migration. Subspeciesists believe in multi-regional origins and reject a single out of Africa migration. That implies total replacement of other hominid species outside of the African continent. But the human evolutionary tree changes by the year. In 2016, major paleontology news was made with the discovery of Grascikop ithicus in Greece and Bulgaria, suggesting human origins in Europe going back some 800,000 years. In 2015, Dr. Lee Berger uncovered Homo naledi in caves in South Africa. In late 2018, researchers discovered an entirely new species of hominids through AI. They used deep learning algorithms and statistical methods, identifying a third species in the genome of Asian individuals. This was in the Analytics India magazine, January 2019. Now, all of these are cited. I'm not going to go over every citation. Very recent human fossils, though, finds in Morocco suggesting our species evolved in multiple locations across the African continent, according to biologist and geneticist Carl Zimmern. And subspeciesists, as I say, are what you would call, what I would subscribe to, really, living in this multi-regional origin. But there are many people here who have been crediting a lot of these finds. The idea that one single ancestral group recently became human, then killed off, or otherwise replaced everyone else on the planet, simply isn't true. Humans arose through a complex process of migration, interaction, and exchange over hundreds of thousands of years or more. Our lineage is best represented by a braided stream with input from many different groups, creating a flourishing, adaptable humans of today in all our glorious diversity. That was Rebecca Ackerman, professor in the Department of Archaeology at UCT in South Africa. Now, multi-regional is particularly popular and well-funded, or funded at all, I might add, among Chinese and Russian paleontologists, such as Anatoly Klyazov, Dr. Wu Xinzi, and Zi Guangmao of the Guangxi Cultural Heritage Institute. A leading proponent of multi-regional theory in the United States is Dr. Milford Wolpoff of the University of Michigan. According to Wolpoff, the evolutionary patterns of three different regions show that the earliest modern humans are not Africans and do not have the complex of features that characterize the Africans of that time or any other. There is no evidence of specific admixture with Africans of any time, let alone replacement by them. There is indisputable evidence for the continuity of distinct unique combinations of skeletal features in different regions, connecting the earliest human populations with recent and living peoples. Another prominent advocate for regional continuity was Dr. Alan Thorne of the University of Sydney and the Australian Academy of the Humanities. Thorne, who was friends with Wolpoff and Wu, helped to reconstruct the famous Mungo Man skulls from the Cow Swamp near Victoria. Cow, that's K-O-W, Cow Swamp near Victoria. And here's a quote out of paleoanthro.org from 2013. He was convinced that Java Homo erectus had been subjected to sapientizing gene flow so that the Indonesian population became Homo sapiens, while at the same time preserving regional characteristics, and that this population had then spread to Australia and New Guinea. Homo erectus, origins for modern Chinese. This piece goes on to state that China may contain the best evidence for supporting the multi-regional model. Here, there are discoveries of a couple of skulls dated to roughly 100,000 years ago that seem to possess a mixture of classic Homo erectus and Homo sapiens traits. Dr. Johansson, that's the discoverer of Lucy, and that was out of actionbioscience.org. In the highly acclaimed 2013 documentary The Incredible Journey, Alice Roberts confronted Dr. Wu in the BBC documentary. She goes on, "Professor Wu, I'm a complete novice, but I look at this modern skull here, this 30,000-year-old skull from Zhu Kaozian, and this looks quite similar to me to other skulls from Europe." And on the BBC recording, that was at the 40-minute mark, for those who are interested. The famous Dali skull from China's Shaanxi province has since been reanalyzed, strongly suggesting a continuum from Homo erectus to modern Han Chinese. Dr. Pei Bo further confirmed Wu at a 2017 conference in Israel with David Reich. He stated, "There is some interesting indication in the Denisovan genome. They have an old component in their genome that is not there in Neanderthals. It seems to come in more than a million years from something that diverged from the human lineage. It's very tempting to say that's a Homo erectus type thing, or something like that." Recent fossil finds in Guangxi and Yunxian give further weight to Homo erectus origins for Han Chinese. At the time, notably, John Hawkes scoffed at the Guangxi mandible find as not at all distinguishable from other Homo sapiens of the period. This article then goes on to consider, why does the multi-regional model matter? You know, why do we care about any of this, right? For decades now, governments, multinational corporations, academia, and liberal media have been pushing a kumbaya, we are the world agenda, trying to whitewash or even erase racial differences. However, since 2010, with Pei Bo's magnificent discovery, and with very recent fossil finds such as Morocco, Greece, and Bulgaria, the hard scientific evidence has contradicted their globalist agenda. David Reich's monumental piece in the New York Times, "How Genetics is Changing Our Understanding of Race," March 2018, may have been a critical turning point. Reich, a highly respected Ivy League liberal, made it safe to discuss racial differences. That same month, March 2018, Spencer Wells on the Incitome podcast, even this whole question of a recent sub-Saharan African origin for Homo sapiens is now being called into question with fossil remains. This is beyond genetics. The new finds in Israel, Jebel Irhoud from Morocco, some of these finds, these are very old and they look like Homo sapiens, like us. Maria Martinan Torres, director of Spain's National Research Center on Human Evolution, gently backs multi-regional. She believes source and sink throughout Asia of repeated colonization, interbreeding, and extinctions. Furthermore, maybe Africa was not the only human cradle. And that's out of scmp.com, July 2018. I have cited most of these. If you folks want to check out Human Origins Multi-Regional or Out of Africa, this was from Darwin Subspeciesist, the original publisher. And there's a bit that it has at the end here. Dr. John Hawks now asserts, Twitter, January 2018, to have long held multi-regional beliefs. You, subspeciesist.com, seem unaware that I have been one of the main scientific advocates of multi-regional evolution for 20 years. And evidently, he co-authored Multi-Regional, Not Multi-Origins with Professor Wolpoff, April 2000. Even London National History Museum's Christopher Stringer concedes, modernity was not a package that had a single African origin in one time, place, and population, but was a composite whose elements appeared and sometimes disappeared at different times and places. A recent African origin still represents the predominant but not exclusive mode of evolution for Homo sapiens. Rather than saying we're all multi-regionalists, multi-regional contributions rather than all out of Africa. So, it is very compelling how many different citations and people from different regions and studies contribute to what I've detailed there, folks. There's actually another equally impressive piece covering the Minoans. The Minoans preceded the ancient Greeks. New DNA analysis, ancient Minoans were Europeans. And this is from May of this year. The previous article was April. This published May. Ancient DNA analyses reveal Minoan and Mycenaean origins. An analysis of ancient DNA has revealed that ancient Minoans and Mycenaeans were genetically similar, with both peoples descending from early Neolithic farmers. They likely migrated from Anatolia to Greece and Crete thousands of years prior to the Bronze Age. Modern Greeks, in turn, are largely descendants of the Mycenaeans, the study found. The discovery of the Minoan and Mycenaean civilizations on the island of Crete and on mainland Greece in the late 1800s gave birth to modern archaeology and opened a direct window into the European Bronze Age. This period of history had previously been glimpsed only through Homer's epics, the Iliad and Odyssey. The Minoan civilization flourished on Crete beginning in the 3rd millennium before the Common Era, and was astonishingly advanced artistically and technologically. The Minoans were also the first literate people of Europe. The Mycenaean civilization developed in mainland Greece in the 2nd millennium before the Common Era. It shared many cultural features with the Minoans. They used the Linear B script, an early form of Greek. The origins of the Minoan and Mycenaean peoples, however, have puzzled archaeologists for over 100 years. It is widely believed that they derived from different ancestral populations. A new analysis of well-preserved Minoan and Mycenaean DNA now provides many answers and insights. An international team of researchers from the University of Washington, the Harvard Medical School, and the Max Planck Institute for the Science of Human History, together with archaeologists and other collaborators in Greece and Turkey, report the first genome-wide DNA sequence data on the Bronze Age inhabitants of mainland Greece, Crete, and southwestern Anatolia. UW Medicine researcher George Stamtonopoulos, professor of genome sciences and the medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine, is the senior author on the paper describing the new findings. The study appears August 2nd in the advanced online edition of the journal Nature. The researchers analyzed tooth DNA from the remains of 19 ancient individuals who could be definitively identified by archaeological evidence as Minoans of Crete, Mycenaeans of mainland Greece, and people who lived in southwestern Anatolia. The DNA samples were collected by Stamtonopoulos and his archaeological collaborators and were initially analyzed in his laboratory. Subsequently, Stamtonopoulos began collaborating with Johannes Kraus of the Max Planck Institute, who undertook comprehensive genomic DNA sequencing using techniques developed in his laboratory, and P. David Reich of Harvard Medical School, who worked with Iosif Lazaridis on collation and statistical genetic analysis of the data. Study results show that Minoans and Mycenaeans were genetically highly similar but not identical, and that modern Greeks descend from these populations. The Minoans and Mycenaeans descended mainly from early Neolithic farmers, likely migrating thousands of years prior to the Bronze Age from Anatolia, in what is today modern Turkey. Minoans, Mycenaeans, and modern Greeks also had some ancestry related to the ancient people of the Caucasus. Armenia and Iran. This finally suggests that some migration occurred in the Aegean and southwestern Anatolia from further east after the time of the earliest farmers, said Lazaridis. While both Minoans and Mycenaeans had both first farmer and eastern genetic origins, Mycenaeans traced an additional minor component of their ancestry to ancient inhabitants of eastern Europe and northern Eurasia. This type of so-called ancient North Eurasian ancestry is one of the three ancestral populations of present-day Europeans, and is also found in modern Greeks. A passion for history inspired Stamtonopoulos to initiate this project. For over 100 years, many hotly contested theories have circulated concerning the origin of the inhabitants of Bronze Age, Classical, and Modern Greece, including the so-called Coming of the Greeks in the late 2nd millennium, the Black Athenia hypotheses of the Afro-Asiatic origins of Classical Greek civilization, and the notorious theory of the 19th century German historian Fallmerayer who had popularized the belief that the descendants of the ancient Greeks had vanished in early medieval times. While the new study does not resolve all the outstanding questions, it provides key answers. Importantly, the findings disprove the widely held theory that the Mycenaeans were a foreign population in the Aegean and were not related to the Minoans. The results also dispel the theory that modern Greeks did not descend from Mycenaeans and later ancient Greek populations. In broad strokes, the new study shows that there was genetic continuity in the Aegean from the time of the first farmers to present-day Greece, but not in isolation. The peoples of the Greek mainland had some admixture with ancient North Eurasians and peoples of the Eastern European steppe, both before and after the time of the Minoans and Mycenaeans, which may provide the missing link between Greek speakers and their linguistic relatives elsewhere in Europe and Asia. The study thus underscores the power of analyses of ancient DNA to solve vexing historical problems and sets the stage for many future studies that promise to untangle the threads of history, archaeology, and language. The Minoans were Caucasians. DNA debunks long-standing theory that Europe's most first advanced culture was from Africa. Ancient genomic data from 19 European and Anatolian individuals, including Mycenaeans from mainland Greece and Minoans from Crete, are reported online in Nature this week. The findings provide new clues into the origins of these two prominent archaeological cultures that emerged in the Aegean during the Bronze Age, of which were first known through ancient poetic and historical traditions, beginning with Homer and Herodotus. Ancient DNA research has traced the primary ancestors of early European farmers to the highly similar Neolithic populations who lived in Greece and Western Anatolian from the 7th millennium BC. The later history of these regions down to the Bronze Age is less clear, and many questions remain, including the degree of genetic affinity between mainland and Crete populations, and how both groups related to other ancient populations from Europe and to modern Greeks. Iosif Lazaridis and colleagues' analysis, genome-wide data from 19 ancient individuals, including 10 Minoans from Crete, dating to around 2900 to 1700 BC, 4 Mycenaeans from the Greek mainland, dating to around 1700 to 1200 BC, and 3 individuals from southwestern Anatolia, dating to around 2800 to 1800 BC. They find that Minoans and Mycenaeans were genetically very similar, with about 3/4 shared ancestry with the first Neolithic farmers of western Anatolia and the Aegean, and most of the remainder from ancient populations, like those from the Caucasus and Iran. The Minoans were Caucasian. DNA debunks long-standing theory that Europe's first advanced culture was from Africa. British archaeologists who in 1900 discovered the Minoan culture believed they were from Libya or Egypt. The Minoan civilization arose on Crete in the 27th century BC and flourished until the 15th century BC. DNA analysis has debunked the long-standing myths that the Minoans, who some 5,000 years ago established Europe's first advanced Bronze Age culture, being from Africa. The Minoan civilization arose on the Mediterranean island of Crete in approximately the 27th century BC and flourished for 12 centuries until the 15th century BC. So, I mean, a lot of this is debunking the myths of crediting everything to Africa. and through a single line. I know I might be losing you folks here near the end of this one. There's just so much that they pack in here. But the culture was lost until British archaeologist Sir Arthur Evans unearthed its remains on Crete in 1900, where he found vestiges of a civilization he believed was formed by refugees from northern Egypt. Modern archaeologists have cast doubt on that version of events, and now DNA tests of Minoan remains suggests they were descendants from ancient farmers who settled the islands thousands of years earlier. These people, it is believed, are from the same stock that came from the east to populate the rest of Europe. Evans set to work on Crete in 1900 with a team of archaeologists soon after the island was liberated from the yoke of the Ottoman Empire, almost immediately unearthing a great palace. He named the civilization he discovered after the legendary Greek king Minos, and, based on likenesses between Minoan artifacts and those from Egypt and Libya, proposed that its founders migrated into the area from North Africa. Since then, our other archaeologists have suggested that the Minoans may have come from other regions, possibly Turkey, the Balkans, or the Middle East. But now a joint U.S. and Greek team has made a mitochondrial DNA analysis of Minoan skeletal remains to determine the likely ancestors of the ancient people. Mitochondria, the energy powerhouses of cells, contain their own DNA or genetic code, and because mitochondrial DNA is passed down from mothers to their children via the human egg, it contains information about maternal ancestry. Findings suggest that the Minoan civilization arose from the population already living in Crete, and that these people were probably descendants from the first humans to reach there about 9,000 years ago. Further, they found the remains have the greatest genetic similarity with modern European populations. Senior researcher Dr. George Stamatonopoulos, professor of medicine and genome sciences at the University of Washington, said the analyses showed these people probably came to the area from the east, not the south. About 9,000 years ago, there was an extensive migration of Neolithic humans from the regions of Anatolia that today comprise parts of Turkey and the Middle East, he said. At the same time, the first Neolithic inhabitants reached Crete. Our mitochondrial DNA analyses shows that the Minoans' strongest genetic relationships are with these Neolithic humans, as well as with ancient and modern Europeans. These results suggest the Minoan civilization arose 5,000 years ago in Crete from an ancestral Neolithic population that had arrived in the region about 4,000 years earlier. Our data suggests that the Neolithic population that gave rise to the Minoans also migrated into Europe and gave rise to modern European peoples. Dr. Stamatonopoulos and his team analyzed samples from 37 skeletons found in a cave in Crete's Lassithi Plateau, and compared them with mitochondrial DNA sequences from 135 modern and ancient human populations. The Minoan samples revealed 21 distinct mitochondrial DNA variations, of which 6 were unique to the Minoans and 15 were shared with modern and ancient populations. None of the Minoans carried mitochondrial DNA variations characteristic of African populations. Further analysis showed that the Minoans were only distantly related to Egyptian, Libyan, and other North African populations. Indeed, the Minoan shared the greatest percentage of their mitochondrial DNA variation with European populations, especially those in Northern and Western Europe. When plotted geographically, shared Minoan mitochondrial DNA variation was lowest in North Africa and increased progressively across the Middle East, Caucasus, Mediterranean Islands, Southern Europe, and mainland Europe. The highest percentage of shared Minoan mitochondrial DNA variation was found with Neolithic populations from Southern Europe. The analysis also showed a high degree of sharing with the current population of the Lacithi Plateau and Greece. In fact, the maternal genetic information passed down through many generations of mitochondria is still present in modern-day residents of the area where the Minoan skeletons were found. Dr. Stamatonopoulos said he believes that the findings highlight the importance of DNA analysis as a tool for understanding human history. Genetic analyses are playing an increasingly important role in predicting the and protecting of human health, he said. And our study underscores the importance of DNA not only in helping us to have healthier futures, but also to understand our past. So I think if you folks were able to last, and that was a lot of good evidence with a plethora of sources there, to just show there is something unique and worth preserving, to be sure, from each of these nations. Each of these nations, each of these peoples, and certainly of their accomplishments. As far as Western culture, well, it is European, and it is clear that it is very distinct. And it must not be genocided. The European lands, the lands which have adopted European culture, customs, ways of those people. The more we see changes in native populations, the more you cannot keep things the way they were. These are the sort of uncomfortable topics that people don't want to touch on. I mean, all of that may have been easier than what I could go into next for some out there or people you know. But I mean, we all have people who, well, we try to get along with everyone. We try to make best of the circumstances. Of course, no one wants war. Well, most people don't want war. A lot think that it's the only way to change things. You know, we have people who want civil war. We have people who want world wars to destroy these empires. But most of us do not want war. Nonetheless, a lot of people have grown accustomed to all those they have around them, increasingly multicultural in all of our towns and cities. I mean, I'm in the United States and in a very mixed mega city, Chicago, the third largest city population of the United States after New York and Los Angeles. And yeah, I can relate as much as anyone growing up. But now 42 years, over 42 years, and all of the different people who stick to their own groups to varying degrees, are racially conscious to varying degrees, certainly more with the non-whites than the whites, the way we've been programmed to think it evil, something that should be abhorred, at least for us, because of what we're told of history. There's a professor who was recently cited in Denmark, a Danish professor. And the quote at the top of this piece, entitled, "Europe has three options. Submission, repatriation, or civil war." This Danish professor had published articles in which he says the escalating mass immigration gives Europe only these three choices. I don't know how much I agree with that being something that would necessarily change things for the better. I mean, when you look at the civil war option, it could just allow justification for things to get a whole lot worse. As far as those who are in control, as far as the use of military force to stop any sort of assembly, we're already seeing with the yellow vest protests far too much from the police, stopping them from even being able to do what they should have the right to. But, I mean, this goes on. I'll leave it at that. Helmut Nyberg, a retired professor of developmental psychology at Aarhus University, published in this debate that was published in the Jyllands Posten newspaper, warned of the drastic effects of the current mass immigration into Europe from the Middle East, North African region, MENA region. Nyberg begins his article with the following words. Now, before I continue, folks, I just want to make clear that this article I am reading is already 3 years old. All right, this article is from 2016. I know that between 2015 and 2016 alone, there was a huge surge in immigration, and it was being covered already considerably. A lot of outlets, some of which I frequented. So, this 2016 article now has Nyberg beginning his 2016 article with the words, "In 2012, I wrote the article, The Decay of Western Civilization, Double Relaxed Darwinian Selection. I estimated the impact on Europeans of mass immigration and mixture with low IQ populations, and found the Westerners would soon be in the minority in Europe, and that the average IQ will then fall so much that prosperity, democracy, and civilization itself will be threatened." Sorry, folks, I'm playing with my mic gain a little here. Multitasking here. Now, in 2016, the now almost complete conquest by immigration leaves us with only three options: submission, repatriation, or civil war. Submission, repatriation, or civil war. Unless Europe immediately begins to conduct responsible family immigration and integration policies, illuminated by the theory of evolution, civil war stands out as the most likely result. Nyborg says further that it is the politicization of science that makes politicians fear to take biology, race, into account when deciding on European immigration policy. Nyberg argues that if biological knowledge is not taken into account, non-white immigrants with low IQs will destroy European society. The argument for this as Nyberg shows, is that human evolution over many thousands of years in the harsh climate of Europe caused Europeans to become more altruistic and intelligent than other races. And that is why Europeans became better at creating free societies, developing and upholding science, and creating less primitive and less superstitious religions than those developed by other groups. Nyberg writes that academics, together with bishops and priests, feminists, secular humanists, and charities like Save the Children and the Red Cross, failed Danish society by not recognizing the problems with what Nyberg calls low IQ immigration. Nyberg describes non-white immigrants who are already in Denmark as a potential subversive fifth column. He says that young immigrants who, because of their low intelligence, are almost always outsiders in a school system adapted for Westerners, readily become radicalized and turned against society because they simply do not fit in. Around 2075, Nyberg predicts, non-white immigrants and their descendants will be in the majority in Denmark, and then, if not long before, can, through democracy, introduce Sharia law as the law of the land. Before 2050, Nyberg states, children from the MENA region will be in the majority in Danish elementary schools. Therefore, says Nyberg, the Danes have to choose between just three options. Submit to eventual extinction after a period of foreign rule. Quickly rescue the situation by extensive repatriation. Or fight a civil war. So, Helmuth Nyberg, who's a retired professor of developmental psychology at the University of Aarhus, is primarily known for his research on hormones and intelligence. Since 2005, when he wrote about the biological differences between men and women, he has been a controversial figure in Denmark. In 2011, Nyberg participated in a seminar organized by a revisionist association in Denmark, where he spoke alongside the American writers and activists Dr. David Duke and Professor Kevin B. MacDonald. Also in 2011, Nyberg wrote the article The Decay of Western Civilization, Double Relaxed Darwinian Selection, in a peer-reviewed academic journal. In the article, he says that the MENA immigration to the West has a dysgenic effect and lowers the intelligence of the population. This article was reported for scientific misconduct by Anthony Weitz, and Nyberg was charged and legally harassed for years afterward. He was acquitted on 4 of 6 counts in 2013, and in 2016, successfully appealed the 2 remaining counts. I'm glad to hear that he appealed those which remained, at least, folks. But that's, that's painting a good picture right there. And as I say, that one was 2016. When you look how much more Europe and the United States have endured in the past 3 years, I mean, these have been major years of immigration. Extremely aggressive immigration policies, mandates, no less. And I can't believe so many places are still trying to use the word refugee. The nicest term you could apply would perhaps be economic migrants or economic opportunists. Invaders, I've heard some suggest, and I can't say, in many cases, it is not wholly appropriate. Oh, look at this. I was not even considering this next story, folks. But the same exact word used, and this was in my subliminal. Non-white invaders, no, U.S. system cannot cope with their numbers. Courts and police were never intended or designed to cope with an invasion. A military response will be necessary, and an entirely new government is needed in order for such military action, as the present corrupt leaders are forbidden to issue any such orders. The continuing stream of non-white invaders, now seeking asylum in the U.S., has continued to grow. Exponentially, as word has leaked back that their sheer numbers have overwhelmed the existing U.S. system to cope, leading entire family units just to be released into the U.S., it has emerged. As detailed in a new study by the Center for Immigration Studies on the March 2019 report by the Syracuse University's Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse, TRAC, the immigration court's growing asylum backlog raises significant questions about the capability of the U.S. immigrant system to process the flood of so-called family units entering illegally with children at the southwest border, which could lead to immigration enforcement breakdown. The TRAC report warned that arrivals greatly outnumbered the families in court proceedings, and that the number of family units apprehended by Border Patrol or detained at ports of entry dwarfs the actual number of cases that have thus far made their way to immigration court. The report said that as of February 28, 2019, the number of pending cases on the court's active docket topped 855,000. This is an increase in over 300,000 pending cases over the backlog at the end of January 2017 when President Trump took office. This figure does not include the over 300,000 previously completed cases that EOIR placed back on the pending rolls that have not yet been put onto the active docket. It is doubtful that ICE is detaining tens of thousands of family units until immigration judges can make determinations on their asylum applications. This again would mean that those aliens are being released indefinitely, CIS report said. If any alien's purpose in coming to the United States illegally is to live and work in the United States, the reason for the vast majority of illegal entrants, the release of that alien gives other foreign nationals a strong incentive to enter the United States illegally. If there is significant lag time between apprehension and either credible fear determinations or the placement of aliens found to have a credible fear into removal proceedings, or the docketing of cases of aliens found to have a credible fear with the immigration courts, and those aliens are at large in the United States during such lag times, those incentives increase, the CIS said. This is too tolerant, you know. I'd say that article's whole point of view is even just too tolerant. But I didn't even go through it all, that one. But we have so many cases of regional confirmations of just how all-encompassing these issues are becoming, folks. Some of these I know I reported a little while back. This one was from 16 of May. Hundreds of African migrants protest for entry at Texas border bridge. The Mexican side of a bridge that separates Laredo, Texas from Nuevo Laredo. Tamaulipas. A large group of African migrants gathered on the south side of the Laredo port of entry to protest U.S. immigration policies that are keeping them from entering the U.S. to claim asylum, was this story. It made it sound like some are being kept out. You know, I was skeptical of the way this was even being portrayed. But they did have a video with it that actually could just make me more suspicious, honestly. These laws are already on the books. It's one of the most concerning aspects. I'm not familiar with specific laws for European nations, but here, these laws are already in the books, and they're not being enforced. ICE is being completely blocked in all ways possible at local and regional levels through liberal stronghold politicians with prominence and sway. We had another article out of Station Gossip. African migrants illegally enter U.S. then swiftly disperse to 16 cities across America. Approximately 300 Congolese and Angolan citizens who crossed the border on June 4 near the southern central Texas towns, Eagle Pass and Del Rio, have since been bused to various cities across the U.S., according to the Washington Examiner. After the migrants crossed the Rio Grande, they surrendered to Border Patrol agents and claimed political asylum. However, the agents did not take the migrants into the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a standard procedure of immigration detainment at the border. Instead, it released families onto the streets of Eagle Pass and Del Rio, according to two government and non-governmental officials. With first-hand knowledge of the matter, the African migrants then bought bus tickets to either San Antonio or Austin, according to San Antonio Interim Assistant City Manager Colleen Bridger. If a family, the sponsor, it's been 24 to 48 hours and they can't buy the bus ticket, then we'll buy it. That was Elizabeth Nemeth, Executive Director of Catholic Charities, Westside Center. For a family of 5 to 7 looking to travel by bus to New York, it will cost $2,000, she said. And I wonder how so many of these people are here in Chicago. You know, clearly from Central America or Africa. Very often, you just can tell how recent they arrived here by subtleties. And I can see how much this is going to affect the cultures in a big hurry. Regardless of all of the black superheroes they're throwing at us in the films coming out of Hollywood these days. And this goes on. The majority of the migrants traveled to Portland, Maine, where there's a growing community of African migrants, while others went to Boston, Chicago, there we go, New York City, among a dozen other cities. How are the migrants reaching the U.S.? This asks. Well, I'm sure they're not going to tell you everything I could tell you, folks. Let's see what they're going to say here. Christina Higgs, spokeswoman for Catholic Charities of the San Antonio region, explained to the Examiner that migrants spend 6 or 7 months traveling to Brazil before making the journey north to the U.S. Migrants hedge their bets on this method because they believe the refugee route will not work, she said. Officials believe African migrants will continue to surge the border in the coming months. The problem is becoming so bad that San Antonio needs French and African dialect speakers to help with the migrant surge. Now, this is preposterous. You don't need to speak their language. You need to kick them back to their country. processing? Really? I mean, just the whole attitude, has problems from the get-go, is what I would say. That was the end of that one anyway, folks. Here's another one out of Cryptogon.com. Haven't heard of them before. Hundreds of illegal immigrants from Congo and Angola dropped off in San Antonio. For those of you following along on the Congolese migrant influx in San Antonio, and we have a video included. Roughly 350 migrants from the Congo are expected to arrive in San Antonio the coming days, leaving the city scrambling for these French-speaking volunteers. Again, worrying about, you know, that you have enough people who speak the language of the illegal immigrants. Well, we didn't get a heads up. Interim city manager Dr. Colleen Bridger told Ken 5 on Thursday. Bridger said the Congolese migrants began to arrive in town on Tuesday. They told Migrant Resource Center workers they traveled with a group of about 350 migrants through Ecuador to the southern border. When we were called border control to confirm, they said, yeah, another 200 to 300 from the Congo and Angola will be coming to San Antonio, Bridger said. That included Masengi, a Congolese migrant who didn't want to have his face on camera but told Ken's 5 via Google Translate he arrived to the southern border as an asylum seeker. He said he came to America for security reasons and said, my family is staying in my country, but with the help of the U.S., I can get it back. Well, we have another one here. This was out of the Tennessee Star. This was back in April 29th. Radio ads in Central America are encouraging illegal immigration, Border Patrol says. They even had this covered on Fox News. A Border Patrol agent said there are radio advertisements playing in Central America encouraging locals to flee to the U.S. illegally to obtain the American dream. The word is definitely out. They have advertisements on radio. You listen to your radio on the way to work, on your way to the grocery store. And that country is advertising, if you want the American dream, we'll help you out. We'll teach you how to get into the United States. A unified border agent said to Fox News host Maria Bartiromo on Sunday. Bartiromo told the southern border. She toured the southern border in the El Paso sector, a region the agent described as probably the busiest area in the country in terms of illegal immigration. The Fox News host spotted a family crossing the border as she was filming, meeting one Ecuadorian woman with the infant, who she said had been traveling for 2 months. I had a tear in my eye, you know. The agent said they are encountering a unprecedented number of family units. Advertisements paid for by human smugglers encouraging Central Americans to migrate to the U.S. have become more prevalent in recent time, with many illegal aliens claiming they were prompted to make the trip specifically because of the promises made by those ads. The whole world knows. They put it in the news. They tell us everywhere, if you come to the United States, they'll help you. A Honduran woman told agents when she was apprehended near the Rio Grande Valley. A Guatemalan migrant caught that same day made a similar statement. The human smuggling business has been booming in Central America. A study by the RAND Corporation estimated human smugglers transporting people from the Northern Triangle, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, to the U.S., raked in somewhere between $200 million and $2.3 billion in revenue in 2017. Migrants are also told they have a much higher chance of reaching the interior of the U.S. if they bring children. The result has been a total of 3,000 fraudulent families appearing at the U.S.-Mexico border in the past 6 months alone, according to the Department of Homeland Security. The department is adopting tactics to bring down the migrant child rings smugglers used to get people past border enforcement. To remark a little further on that, folks, I have also been alerted of reports of children being used multiple times. They come across the border with the children, child or children, and then those children go back across the border into Mexico to be used again, sold, someone paying once again a different person to come across claiming it's their child. And you have these people who are raking in dough off these children every time they're used as a prop for these Mexicans or, in some cases, Central Americans or all of these cases. Some of them are not even, of course, from Central or Southern America, are over from Africa, taking a long route. But
this call is being recorded.
In a lot of cases, seems to be the case. There's one out of Florida here. We have a Jewish school principal who was reprimanded, trying to tell the truth. A little more out of Georgia. The great replacement is here. Chirac, the welcoming city where I am here. As well, they're not allowing ICE to detain anyone. You know, they won't allow them to use any of the Chicago Police Department databases. That will remain in place. This new black lesbian we have as the mayor of Chicago. But yeah, it's the same way in Georgia. Obviously, LA had some more predictions of the invasions that have, well, the statistics to come and also just the numbers. I mean, I had some from Italy. Really, this was detailing 2016 in Italy. London. What has become of dear old London and our people? This one article goes on. But there's a lot more in Europe and America than is being told. And of course, who's behind this, you know? Who is behind this? And who's on the line? Looks like we have someone who joined us here. I think we have...
Good evening!
Yes, we do. Johnny in Texas with Liberty Light News. Johnny Sabalos, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Not too bad. Yourself, sir?
Doing the best I can, you know, trying to enjoy the day. When I do my show, this is the day I also try to relax and take a deep breath a little more as well. Deeper perspective and try to stay positive no matter what news I'm covering, you know. I mean, I know you had your show that you already did today. Is that right?
No, it's on tonight at 8 Mountain Time.
Okay, my bad. Yeah. It's 8 Mountain Time. That's what I was thinking. But you said the opposite in the message. So yeah, you're going to be on after.
Well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Folks, be sure to tune in, libertylightnews.com, or even on Facebook, Johnny Sabalos, friend request Johnny here. Check out his show after mine, by all means. Wednesday is a good night, you know. How are you feeling? You feeling good? I've been talking about the immigration and Western society. I mean, people, a lot of this is taboo, Johnny, you know. I mean, there's so much evidence I was covering at the first hour that the out of Africa theory is a lie. You know, I mean, there are separate lineages, that have existed for a long time, and it's even more justification to preserve all races, peoples, cultures, not just the non-whites. You know, I mean, white people aren't inherently evil. You know, we're blamed for everything in history. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, there were black and Jew, slave ship owners, slave owners, sellers, all this. No, but white people, it's all whites. And so there's a stigma. And there's a stigma, and that's used to justify a lot of the immigration now. I was going over a lot of predictions for the future of Europe and America, and this kind of society that we're able to have, European society, and even in America in particular, there are so many freedoms we have, you know, free societies, so-called. You know, just the amount of self-governance. And a lot of that has to do with the altruism, the culture, and, you know, it's not to be cruel, but there are differences among different people, physically, and just attributes that, you know, they evolved with. There are IQ differences. That's where the taboo comes in. People don't want to talk about the IQ differences, but honestly, you have to separate people to some extent to allow them to all thrive into the future, and they make the best they can, or they'll have to adapt, but see where they need to work on things. But you can't do that when you blur them all together and you just stigmatize, well, in this case, the white people. I mean, what do you think about this? Because, I mean, you have an interesting perspective because you have a lot of interaction with Hispanic communities, but you actually say it turns out you have Spanish heritage, so you're all over the map and people you interact with and people that are friends and family and where you're located. I mean, you're in Texas. You're right at one of the ground zero zones there.
Oh, yes. We're right here in El Paso, Texas. Yeah, I was interested when you were talking about your show and the beginning of history of Africa and Turkey and all those areas. That's exactly what we're seeing in the Middle East and America right now. People are bombarding, other cultures are bombarding countries with their migration, their population. And up here, you were talking about the border. Yes, it's happening frequently all the time, and it's still a crisis that nobody's talking about. But they want to strip that culture, as you're mentioning. And you were bringing up people in Congress and stuff and all these people. Tonight's show, I'm actually going to be going over Ilhan Omar and how her family came from Africa and migrated over here. And she's Muslim herself, but she came from Africa. And she's a congresswoman, and she's starting to do everything that you've been talking about today. Take away our freedom, strip them away. We're having people in Congress now from other cultures come and say America's way is bad. And while they're marrying their brothers and sisters. So I'm going to be going a lot of over that today. So if anybody tunes in, I'll be covering a lot of that with some footage. But it's sickening because I think people want to coexist. But when it's forced upon people, it seems to be always a problem, especially when government's hands involved, because it's for the good of humanity while they're scrutinizing the white people at the same time. It's like, wow. White people built what you live in today.
Yeah, there was this other. Yeah, there was this other article I was going to touch on. All white people are being removed from history as revisionists rewrite science, medicine, and technology to eliminate pioneers based on the color of their skin. If you haven't noticed, anti-white racism is becoming an accepted cultural norm throughout the United States and much of the Western world. Mainstream entertainment, news, education, and even science and medicine have all but completely been infiltrated and subverted by nefarious entities that are hell-bent on pushing endless white-hating propaganda and revisionist anti-white history on the masses. Their goal being, well, you can probably figure it out. It's suddenly not okay to be white in countries where white people are the majority. And the subverters that now control the narrative has successfully brainwashed and indoctrinated a sizable segment of their populations into believing that being white automatically means that you're evil, and being black or brown automatically means that you're good. Using lies and deception as their catalyst for change, these wicked subverters have successfully poisoned the well. They've convinced a disturbing number of useful idiots, many of whom are white themselves, that all white people are inherently racist against black and brown people, and have systemically taken advantage of these people, groups all throughout history, in order to build thriving civilizations. All of it is a complete lie, of course. But this is what's being taught in the next generation of open minds through movies, television, and in the classroom, where little resistance from guilt-complexed whites, many of whom seem to be accepting of the lie, that they're evil because of the color of their skin. Support. It's hard to come by to resist this. It's the stigma that's getting ingrained, like it's a Pavlovian response, is the way I describe it, Johnny. But here, this goes on. The Western prostitutes and politicians have demonized Putin, Maduro, Iran, and Trump to the same extent as the patriotic propagandist Western court historians have demonized Adolf Hitler, writes Paul Craig Roberts from the Institute for Political Economy. But no one is as demonized as white people, and the curious thing is that it is self-demonization, whites demonizing whites. I'll add to that, though. I mean, there are actually a lot of Jews posing as whites who, send off a lot of these sound bites. You'll see it in social media all the time. I mean, it is amazing, because it is behind the immigration agenda, a huge amount of Jewish organizations, and that's something people don't know enough about, because if they saw both the hypocrisy there, and that, a lot of what we can't be sure we can put a finger on, we actually can. But it's something people don't want to know about, In Scandinavia, white people can't even report crimes committed against them by a third world migrant invader for fear of being dubbed a racist. As horrific as the situation has become for people living in the U.S. who don't hate themselves for having white skin, it's in many ways worse, even worse for white people living in Western Europe, and especially in Scandinavia, where it's being completely taken over by white-hating brown migrants. As Roberts explains, native white people living in places like Scandinavia are becoming increasingly fearful about reporting crimes against themselves by brown migrants because they don't want to be falsely accused of committing a hate crime. That's right, if you're victimized as a white person by a black or brown person while existing in Sweden, you could be accused of racism for reporting it and seeking justice. We can expect the same type of anti-white racism to eventually reach the U.S. should things continue on as they've been going without organized pushback. And I can't confirm, a lot of what you see going on in Sweden does come here. For that matter, in the U.S., what you see going on in California can gradually get pressed to the rest of the U.S. as a testing ground. Test tube of
California.
There was a little left here. School children are already being taught lies about American history that paint white people as the sole racist aggressors responsible for black slavery, when in fact it was actually other blacks, Jews, and various other non-whites who were, in many cases, the real perpetrators. Black Studies avoids the fact that the British sea captains who brought African slaves to the British colonies that later became the United States purchased the black slaves from the black king of Dahomey, who captured his fellow blacks in slave wars against other black tribes, Roberts explains. And of course, I pointed out, the majority of those slave ships were actually Jewish-owned, and that non-whites should recognize as being a separate race from whites, especially when you're trying to push blame for who's controlling everything, owning everything, responsible for slavery to such an extent. But yeah, that's where it pretty much ends. And I think they make a lot of good points there. I was surprised, Johnny, that article actually originally came from Natural News.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Health Ranger.
Yeah.
Pretty bold. I thought they kicked him off, actually. They didn't take off his website, though.
Well, he's getting pretty bold with articles like that. And who's behind this? All of these groups. I mentioned all of the Jewish lobby groups are on board with this. And so even people against Zionism, they don't even realize, especially of the Jewish community, how it is like a big pyramid structure of power. There was recently a secret meeting of 25 senators in secret meeting with Jewish leaders to plot strategy against growing anger over influence of Jewish elites. And this really happened June 5th. June 5th of 2019 here. Yeah, heads of 16 heads of Jewish organizations joined 25 Democratic senators in a private meeting. And this was actually, according to the Times of Israel, claimed to be an annual event. So,
yeah.
What do you think of that, Johnny?
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Well, it's crazy. Yeah, I believe a lot of this. I've always said for a long time, I believe the Jews are really just the masters of money. I've said this for a long time, so it's kind of hard to put even your finger on it, even though we know it's the Jews. But just people like state representatives, they sell out to somebody that is Jewish-owned money or something, and they'll pose as a Christian or whatnot and impose legislation on us, if we talk about America's standpoint. But just Europe, EU, UK, they're going through the same problem. I was reading an article the other day. It was actually through CNN, out of all things, and it was talking about the invasion that's happening within EU, UK. And it was saying that the Iranian Muslims infiltrated the EU, UK. And I was just amazed that they would put that, because it was really the politicians that sold out Europe, UK, to the Muslims invaders and created the crisis within Paris and all this. And then they blame the Muslims, or they blame the Jews, while Western civilization is being destroyed. And if you're a white Caucasian male, you don't have a word to say. It's very surreal what's happening. And people don't see it. People don't see it going on in the back scenes like that. They just see it as, oh, another hate crime. Something happens. That's how the media portrays it. It's crazy, especially down here at the border. We see it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, tell us, you know, some things that might not occur to you at you being there all the time. But remember, most of us have never been over near the U.S.-Mexican border. I mean, I don't know. What can you describe? How are things? I mean, things are pretty commonplace as far as just being able to walk in this direction. But you try to get into Mexico, and they have far more issue with it, which a lot of people I think would find that surprising. But Mexico doesn't want just anyone walking in, isn't that right?
No, they don't, but it's kind of part of the old treaty that they had. Yeah, and it's strange because Mexico could have strong border policies, but you could just come on marching into America, just say American citizen, and they'll let you in.
Yeah, I was amazed when I first heard that, you know. I mean,
you don't even have to identify yourself at checkpoint. You just say American citizen.
You've probably checked out more videos. You've probably checked out more videos on the border situation than I have, but maybe in person you've done any investigative exploring as well, perhaps. But what else could you tell the listeners?
Well, yeah, just a lot of change. Since 2005, it changed, and then most recently, since the Trump era, obviously we've seen a big invasion. When it came to the international policies, I've gone over this a few times, but they started the Migration Pact, through the United Nations. Canada and Mexico signed on to it, and it gave incentives for foreigners to come into Mexico, but nobody wants to stay in Mexico. Everybody wants to skip Mexico and come into America. And our politicians, like Veronica Escobar, for example, she's the 16th district of El Paso, Texas, state congresswoman. She's been selling out our policies just within this region for a long time. And nobody really likes her. We don't even know how she still keeps getting voted in. But you talk about these people. We know that these people are selling out to somebody. We just have to follow the money. Sometimes it's Jewish, sometimes it's not. But either way, we're under siege, like you said in the beginning of your show. And it's all to strip away the history of one's culture. They're trying to get rid of white statues of men, of white men, prominent figures. And people are coming to America, and they don't even know their history, let alone the American kids that are in the public schooling education. You ask them anything about history, they don't know about the triangle trade that you were just speaking about the slaveries. Black people were selling other black people to white colonists, white Jews, or anybody to go to America. And before that, black people had slaves as owners. So right now, I think that we're seeing a big history repeat. It's coming full circle again, but unfortunately, nobody knows their history. And then the media dubs everything as racist. So I think it's an educational problem, really, especially at the border. People talk about racism, and it's like that doesn't faze anybody. If you say anything to anybody down here, you're like, wow, I live on the border. I'm not racist. I'm Hispanic myself, Latino. It's just weird because you see that happening. It's their program, but it doesn't work with everybody. Hopefully people start waking up to it.
And I mean, what are your thoughts on this touchier issue? I point out how, you know, a lot of things contribute to culture. People do have variances, racial differences, even in average IQ. This can add to how you can run societies, even the laws and freedoms that you could have. And it does show how nationalism works more for everyone, the best for everyone. I mean, nationalism, you know, national socialism is, for that matter, you know, it doesn't mean you wish ill for any others. You know, that's one thing that the Jewish World War II narrative always pressed. You know, they wanted you to believe that the Germans of the Third Reich wanted death for non-whites and for everyone else to be speaking German. Assuming that they wanted to conquer the world as well, which was not true. But it's not at all true. You can be nationalist and still want the best for others. That is very common. I've detailed many times a great deal of other nations, non-white nations, who were on the side of the Axis powers during the war, and how there were units that were dedicated to people serving, actually, you know, who are foreigners that believed in these ways. But I mean, when you look at evolution, just Darwinian natural selection, I mean, to each their own, to thrive, and that applies to races. It's not hateful. And why is it you can have, I mean, you know, you can have everything from a newspaper to a cell phone company called Raza, but let whites try to refer to their race with anything out there in a company or anything and see how far they get, right? Why this double standard?
Oh yeah. I've always experienced that, being, diverse, my culture, half white, half, Latino. I've always come across that. I've always wondered that. It's crazy. And I've always agreed with you, and I've mentioned this before. I believe every country should be nationalistic. They should be proud of their roots and their heritage. But even as you're talking about World War II eras and everything that's happened in America's history, it's up real, because even Trump says, America needs to be more nationalistic. We need to start recognizing America and loving one another and appreciating our culture. I know me and you disagree on some of that, but even if Trump says we need to be more nationalistic, you see the mainstream media, all these people that create policies and legislation say, oh, that's racist. That's why would you ever say that? And it's because America is a superpower, just like Germany was. And America does have a lot of money influence, as such Germany did back in the day. And well, I feel all, like some well, of those people
all,
that have
all Germany did was, I mean, the labor of their people was constantly being put right back into the nation's, you know, wealth, because they broke free of the international banking system cartel, and that was their big crime. That was their big crime to humanity.
Yeah, because they bankrupted them. Yeah, they took away everything from the culture. And when Hitler said, no more, we're going to give back to our people and invest in our infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, after World War I.
That's when everything turned south.
Yeah, after World War I, Germany was in dire straits. The Weimar Republic, just the Weimar conditions of that it was left in, is completely an aggressive sort of an indentured servitude, a humiliation, as Hitler saw it, for Germany after World War I. But we flash forward to now. It seems simpler in places in Europe, I would think. Although you try to say that to EU politicians. The EU is a problem because even the establishment, I'd say, of the federal government in this country to what it has become was wrong. I mean, the independence of those original 13 colonies should have spread to 50, keeping sovereignty. They were supposed to be nation states. The EU is the same problem that happened when the U.S. became so federalized and bloated with government. So that's the only major flaw of the U.S., I'd say, is that centralization, it took way too much power than what the founders intended. But here, I still see it as founded by European traditions, culture, as far as a society, and the laws and freedoms you can allow its citizens in the U.S. I mean, yes, we had, so some would say, well, you would have to separate the races then in this country for that to continue, each their own. And perhaps, some even suggest, well, if blacks were brought here as slaves and that was wrong, then why do they want to still be here or something? But this far along, that would be so much, for people to agree on and kill the rest or, that's why I say a lot of people talk about the race war. Just like a lot of people want to see economic and government conditions fall by self-mutual destruction. But, how will we survive very well throughout all that to get to the aftermath even? I don't want to see a race war, but that's how some people see it. But that is why it's more complicated here, Johnny, in the U.S. now. Because, yeah, we're getting more and more of a percentage of people that, even African-Americans, they have some mixed blood, and that does increase average IQs. This is, like I say, I know a taboo topic, but it's true. And you have these sub-Saharan hardcore Africans. Some of them will have IQs like 80 or 70, you'll hear, okay? The population of this country is demographically changing rapidly, just like Europe, and pretty soon we're not going to be able to have as many freedoms with our laws. We're not going to be able to have a republic. It's going to go more towards socialism, communism, because most people just don't have that altruism and that high IQ that will allow them to keep themselves out of trouble. It's just an unfortunate reality, and everything in political correctness and entertainment industry and everything tells you it's not true. And they want you to think the new Captain America is black, and altruism will reign supreme no matter what in this country and this and that, but it's, I'm sorry, but Darwinian science doesn't lie, and it's not hateful or evil. Everyone will come out the best for everyone. But those averages of statistics do exist. I don't know. So this is tough, subject matter, and I do think that's why it's so complicated here, Johnny, because in the future, the demographics are going to change more and more, And there are going to be consequences more and more of Obama's idea of society, which is totalitarianism, the Obama-Hillary approach to the future, just total Marxism, right?
Oh, yeah. It is just insane.
You take it away.
It's in full swing. It's in full swing. Everything that they've wanted to do is actually in full swing, especially with the internet, the TV stations. They own everything. It's really insane. Cause then you got these politicians that are really just globalists. They're globalists. We have AOC here saying, America doesn't just belong to America. It belongs to everybody. Like, no, it doesn't. Excuse me. That does not happen like that. And in other words, she's saying America's up for sale. We're going to take over America one way or another. And it's going to be our way. And it's just like, wow. And that's why I consider myself a constitutionalist, an independent constitutionalist is what I call myself. But it's based off the Republic of the Constitution of Republic. Everybody always says, oh, it's a democracy. Yes, it's some part of a democracy, but it's a constitutional republic. That's because we have to have rules and laws and legislation.
Yes,
and checks and balances of government.
And even,
they want to destroy that.
And originally the founding fathers, some may disagree with this, but not everyone had an equal vote. It was well-educated landowners, bourgeois, Anglo-Saxons, like themselves, who were the ones who were doing all the lawmaking, and the voting as citizens, really, and electing the office and all of that. And, I mean, yeah, they didn't, you know, I mean, you had to have some qualifications. And I mean, I think there's something to be explored further, even for future, along those lines, you know. I mean, perhaps they're, when dealing with, I don't know, I mean, some like how a jury, 12 people, a jury of your peers could be anyone out there. Some people like that. It could be well-educated or an uneducated or,
yeah,
you know,
scary.
But it varies. I mean, I think you kind of do want some credentials for at least some things, especially related to the laws of the nation and potential precedent where they could become changed. I mean, that's, and as far as the idea, like you say, of it being a system of laws, a country of laws, that is crucial to a republic, is that it's a nation of laws, you're following and governed by these laws, not by just mob rule. That's what democracy winds up being, you know? As long as you get that 51% of people to agree with whatever, you know, you've been spouting on that soapbox and worked out this week, you know? And then I could dread what they'll do to the 49% that week. So.
But they want to get rid of the Electoral College and go full democracy. That's a scary thought.
Right. Definitely.
And people don't know anything about the laws. I used to be a big proponent of jury nullification. I used to tell people this all the time about what it entailed. But if somebody believes the law is unjust.
Johnny, explain that for the listeners who might not know.
Yeah, so jury nullification is just, as Richard was saying, just your 12 peers that you co-select within the hearing. This is against the prosecuting attorney and you, the defendant, whatever state you are. But when you're talking about jury nullification, it is part of, I believe it's part of the Bill of Rights, but if it's a law is unjustly written or unjustly enforced, the jury of 12 peers have the right to dismiss the case under the jury of jury nullification. So if somebody gets cited with, say, a joint or something jaywalking, something simple, and they go to jail, they get a citation, and the judge wants to give them 30 days or whatever it is, or 2 years, maybe. Let's just say it's an extreme example. If you explain this to the jury nullification and the entitlements of it, all they have to do is say, well, this is unjust. We did not believe in it. And it doesn't, and it could be a law that's against the law already. Say marijuana, for example, cannabis. Most states are still illegal. But we're seeing within the United States that's slowly going to turn about. So if you explain this and you explain your case as to the jury has the right to denounce this with them, a jury nullification to the judge, then the judge has to uphold that. Of course, the judge could be very strict and say no, 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 which some cases they do because they have the final all say, but they're supposed to go out based off the jury. So that's kind of a big part of rules and regulations within law, because even the judge has the final say, but the jury makes the judgment. But even then, it could be a democracy rule law, and the judge may have it in for you if you're a political figure or something. So I think it's important for people just trying to educate themselves of just simple laws. If you don't believe in something, just think of that as you would never punish somebody. And if you ever get called to jury nullification, God forbid, and you have to take your delegate time to go there, just remember that you do not have to convict that individual if it's something so obsolete, such as jaywalking or a cannabis joint. So I think people need to Google research some of that. I would probably have to refresh myself. It's been probably 4 or 5 years since I talked about it. But it's very good information to know.
So how does that apply the way you were referencing it then?
Yes. You would have to write forth the motion. That's what you would have to do. So when you go to court, I've actually done this myself. I've represented myself. I had to write forth a forward of motion. And that entailed your evidence, maybe some pictures, your statement, and then you would want to copy that during nullification. And in the beginning of your opening statements, after you pick your 12 jurors, which that's a big shebang within itself. If anybody's gone through that, it's really vigorous how they even pick your 12 peers. It's like a voting block system. That's another discussion in itself. But once you get your opening statements, you would read that off as to why you do not believe that this should be criminally enforced, and you would explain those to your peers, your cohorts, the jury. So you would want to make that as a opening statement, and then I would close with it. I never used it in court myself. I never had to use it, but I would close with it as well in your final statements. And, of course, they're going to try to have you on top of the jury for questioning. You could decline that. So people need to be educated as to the court systems, because let's just say you got in trouble two or three times. They could bring up old stuff from your old record. Say you're 18 years old and you got in trouble. The prosecuting attorney could bring up stuff that you did when you're 18 years old. Say you got into a fight or something. So people need to understand that the system is not in your favor. And if we understand that and educate one another and look out for each other, the system doesn't have a chance. But right now, we're seeing that they're dividing us. They're bringing in other cultures. They're invading our borders. And then we have state representatives calling for full overthrow of the government. It's just amazing. And America is the last beacon, I really do believe. And they destroyed Germany. They destroyed a lot of places.
South Africa is something I'm thinking of. We've already had some white farmers who have been murdered just for being white, and they're being blamed for everything. And it's interesting because so far we haven't had black farmers who have been able to tend the land. Even not that killing the previous farmers is justified, and that hasn't happened to all of the whites there. I mean, I now have one who's a host on my station. I hope they don't all get killed for certain. But it is crazy. That's how a democracy run amok with the change of demographics can turn out. You know, like South Africa is experiencing, where we've already had murders, because they've been told white people are the devil. And pretty much that's that's about, you know, the gist of what has compelled this. I mean, we have instigators in some of these cases, I'm sure, that have incited the conditions there. I would be suspicious of Israel. I know they've been interacting with South Africa for a while. And I know how a lot of Zionist Jews and Jewish agendas and groups like to perpetuate all of this multiculturalism, all these demographic quotas in line with their agendas. Some are claiming that the Kalergi plan is just a myth. I think anyone who researches the history of it and the man can see that, no, it is very much real. But that is what democracy can have you wind up with, you know, just senseless genocide. So that's why when I talk about long-term for America, so you could see how I see this confliction, especially where a lot of these people don't want to integrate. You know, I mean, in my city, a few miles north of me, there's a little area that's all Indian and a little Middle Eastern, mostly Indian, though. It's very crowded, you know, on a couple of major streets with all the shops and restaurants there. But they don't want to spread out more. They want to stay with their own people, you know, as crowded as it gets, especially at a busy time of day and trafficy. And, you know, that they don't want to integrate. You know, you'll have this little Vietnamese area. There are a lot of those in a place like Chicago with a lot of races. Most of the other races like to stay to their culture, and they don't want to integrate. And a lot of the ones who are, you know, these ones from a lot of areas, we're finding a lot of crimes and they're getting hidden by the officials. It's considered racist. I mean, you'll have, you know, sub-Saharan Africans in Europe and in America. You'll have Central Americans and Mexicans who if, you know, because of race, it's getting overlooked. They're getting released and they're getting more benefits than legal citizens as well. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, okay, you have both sides, perhaps even in your blood, Johnny. Okay, so you should empathize with Hispanic, but also the white people as well. And so you should see all the sides to this. So, I don't know. I mean, you can see how there's a major issue where they keep loading in. I mean, a much bigger demographic change year by year by year. And this is under someone like Trump. Just imagine if someone like Obama or Hillary gets in office again. It'll get increased even more, I'm sure. They already have all of the leaders of the major cities making things difficult or impossible for ICE agents at every turn. I mean, this past Sunday, they started ICE raids. I was reading that article. And, you know, this Chicago mayor is a perfect example. You know, they're making sure they can't do their job. They can't do any raids. They can't arrest anyone. So, and that's under Trump.
That's ridiculous.
What are we going to do if it's someone who's more playing ball for their agenda than Trump is?
Oh, yeah. A globalist. Not a nationalist, a globalist, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. Yeah, I don't understand why we even have ICE or DHS or CBP if we're not going to use them or we're not going to give them the money. They were talking about the crisis down here. Just 2 weeks ago, they voted against $2.5 billion for Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, parts of Texas and California, the border states. And then they're over here crying foul. And then they're stopping everybody left and right when it comes to reining these felonies in from MS-13 to 13, whatever gangs, and taking them back where they need to belong. But, you know, it's a racist thing. It's a racist thing. And that's how they divide everybody. It's always been about race. Really, I think it really has. And I think the Jews, you talk about that sometimes, they actually knew that. So did the Arabics. They knew that too. The Persians as well. They kind of knew all this. It was always a racial thing and divide. Bible even covers some of this. It's insane. We're just seeing it come full circle, and then they're hitting us hard right now. The education, the new youth block, voter block, is uneducated. They don't even know the founding fathers. They probably couldn't even tell you what's the difference between the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. They don't know nothing.
And they drill home a lot of their points with a lot of these incidents, these traumatic staged incidents. You know, I found one interesting choice. Well, I don't know. They're starting to get a little more racial at times, aren't they? We had the Jewish synagogue. We had Pulse nightclub focusing on LGBT. We had the country music festival in Dallas, which is obviously predominantly white people, probably mostly conservative and loving their guns. So we're starting to get even a bit more racial in the choice of shooting incidents and how they can engineer opinions and the Pavlovian responses in people, in addition to their gun control, about social and societal control mechanisms and perceptions as well. We just had an outcome, the Charlottesville incident. There was a sentencing that just occurred. This was on July 19th. Four young patriots to be crucified for the crime of free speech, assembly, and self-defense. I don't know if it's referring literally that they were tried to death, but evidently the case turned against them. I'd have to double-check to see. But, I mean, you know, that was a big incident to drill home ideas too, you know, of any pro-white nationalist, white nationalist, certainly national socialist, as something that can be seen as anti-Semite, any of that is, look at Charlottesville, these evil people, you know, don't be like that, you know, don't dare. But then, yeah, you say everything's being covered up in the Jewish power structure that is for all of this anti-white, and changes to the country. And the power structure, you know, they get threatened though. I mean, at times, I just, noticed this story. This was actually on the 19th of July as well. Ehud Barak, Ehud Barak, caught on camera covering his face and entering Epstein's pedophile mansion. Former Israeli prime minister and current candidate entered same day as a bevy of girls arrived there. The ever-expanding probe into Jeffrey Epstein's pedophile ring is now threatening to derail the Israeli election, as DailyMail.com has obtained exclusive pictures of one of Benjamin Netanyahu's main challengers hiding his face as he entered the convicted sex offender's Manhattan townhouse. A bevy of young women were also seen going into the multimillionaire's lavish seven-story home on the same day that Ehud Barak was snapped. Barak, a former prime minister of Israel, who is now trying to make a comeback in Israeli politics, has long had business ties to Epstein, which Netanyahu's team are now trying to exploit. And the pictures that DailyMail.com has obtained are certain to add fuel to the fire, as Barak claims he has never met Epstein in the company of women or young girls. The photographs were taken on January 2016, after Epstein, now 66, had returned to New York after an overseas trip. Within hours, at least four young women had gone to the home that the federal government wanted to seize as part of its new case against the financier. So, yeah, what do you think of that? We have a lot of international connections, blackmail dirt that Epstein had in his Rolodex.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a big piece in the puzzle when it comes to these globalists all working together. This is how they've been having control, that and telling everybody that they're racist. It's been a blueprint since history, really. I hope it comes full circle and we finally get to the bottom of it. I think a lot of people will start coming to their senses after this.
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully. I don't know. Looks like it's about that time for me to wrap up. And I know you have your show, folks. Try to check out Johnny Sabalos and Liberty Light News. And I mean, you're covering a lot of this right now, Johnny. So, I mean, what would you like to close with? Your final thoughts.
Well, I thought you had a great show. It's a lot of history that people need to be reminded of. And it's tying into everything with America's culture that we see today. But if we don't get reminded of what's happening, then we just don't understand the propaganda that's mediating right now. So it was a great show, talking point, and I was glad to be able to call in. But I'll be covering a lot more of this as well when it comes to just congressmen or women coming from different cultures and trying to infiltrate America's republic and turn America upside down. And a lot of this is what you covered today when it comes to race baiting, the old blueprints of all this. So if anybody wants to go check us out, we'll be going live stream in the next 10 minutes at libertylightnews.com or Facebook. So thank you so much, Richard, for taking the call.
Sounds excellent, Johnny. And all of you, be certain to do that. Well, you have a great night, sir. And
God bless you.
Thank you. And thank you, folks, all the listeners out there as well. And we will speak again soon. Until next time, transcend the construct. Regards.